Inside Sports Dead in Goal podcast number 71. I'm James Smith and this is Jepson Tenere. How are you going, Jeff?
I am well. 71 and going well.
Absolutely. Big show this week. Got a very special interview guest coming up later on, which we'll touch on a little bit later. And we're going to talk about this so-called rugby league off-season, aren't we? And the never-ending news cycle. This is one of the busiest weeks in rugby league.
Dominated the news cycle this week. You know, I mean, couldn't get away from, you know, from rugby league.
But, it's almost like these cricket games are going on, and they're almost like an interruption, aren't they? It's like, go away, cricket. Like, we're still doing footy.
It really is, isn't it? You know, I mean,
I forgot those South Africa games are even on.
That's what happens when they go behind the paywall, right?
Hey, that's right. Yeah, no more free stuff. No more free stuff.
We need India to get us angry, get us irate.
That's true.
That'll elevate it back to the top level of the news.
Won't be long. Virat Kohli.
Not at all.
Stirring people up.
Not at all.
Yeah, yeah. So what was the most rugby league thing that you did in the last 7 days?
Did you want to go first on this one? I think you should go first on this one.
Okay, yeah, I think mine would be pretty obvious to people. You know how we've got this
follow us. Follow this podcast and follow
and that's everyone in the whole
Twitter.
World.
Yeah.
You know that retro hub that we have?
Yes, indeed.
I'm very excited about.
My favourite place to find yesterday's rugby league news.
Breaking news from 1972. I was feeling quite entrepreneurial or ambitious on Friday, so I lined up all these posts on TweetDeck, I think it is, yeah. So I had one piece of content from our hub going out on Twitter every hour. Yeah, and that was nice and fun to air out all the stuff that's on there, people who are actually looking for proper content. But
that is proper content.
Yeah. I'm glad you said
gentlemen
that.
And maybe the one or two ladies who, you know, actually are, you know, kind of following this stuff. Yeah. That is proper content rather than, you know, just someone sitting at a keyboard and just, you know, firing off missives. James is doing genuine work in this space, tracking down, you know, kind of former greats and former, I mean, not so greats, but, you know, kind of people who are kind of very worthy kind of contribution to the game, and then also kind of digging back into our archive here at the magazine, which has plenty of fantastic material. So it's really great. We can kind of re-liberate that in the online space. So definitely not a waste.
Got to find
that. Sounds way too serious, isn't it? Yeah, you've got to got to take a self-mocking tone, don't we?
Right? Yeah. Well, that's just you and I. So
when the news is so bad, the best thing to do is just go find some good news in the realms of yesteryear.
I think you just summed up my whole life. Do you see? That's how I exist.
He's still processing the news from 30 years later. It's like, you know, it's like that whole. It's that who was it? Is it? The Chinese kind of leader, you know, Chu Enlai, when asked, I don't know whether it's him, could have been someone else. Was it Mao? No, it was Mao maybe. It was Mao Zedong when he was asked about kind of what he thought about, you know, kind of, you know, what was the impact of the French Revolution? Too early to tell. That's what James's belief about rugby league news is. You know, what happened in 1970, you know, can we be sure that, you know, like, we're right about, you know Paris' last, you know, premiership? Has it, you know, had enough time to kind of judge whether that, you know, put a hex on the club for all the time since? Too early to tell.
Yes.
It's only been 32 years, right?
That's right.
Coming up for 33.
Mate, 5 years or so, or however long it was before Richie left this world, he said, we will find out in 30 years' time how great Sachin Tendulkar was. And he's dead right. Oh, well.
Well, we don't know, because like Virat Kohli might be a lot better than he is, and then, yeah.
That's right.
And then they've got another one. This is pretty sure. Like, you know, he's, you know, he looks like a, you know, he looks like a million, well, I was going to say rupees. I don't know what. It might not be a lot. So.
You're being money racist, are you?
Money racist. It's either that or it might not be a lot. It might just be a lot of money. Like, you know, I haven't checked the conversion lately.
It's
but
sort of like selecting Andrew Johns as an immortal.
It's just that
one year after he retired.
We're back on this train, aren't we? That's,
yeah,
you know,
sorry.
Like, Johns. Although I can remember that time that we remember where no one had kind of dobbed people in, but we're walking around the offices of the Rugby League World Cup, and had one of the kind of the executives there kind of take us up to one of the they had this timeline of the history of the League World Cup on the wall, and With bits of the timeline, they had picture, they had images from the history of the tournament out there.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was one, of course, of Andrew Johns from, help my memory, 90, when was that? That would have been 2000, wouldn't it?
2000.
Or maybe World even Cup? 2000 or 95?
Did he have...
Was 95 too early?
Did he have bleached blonde hair?
I can't remember, but anyhow...
Because if he did, it was 2000.
He goes up and he starts gushing about how, you know, he's the greatest footballer he's ever seen in any code. I was like, all right. Seem really way enthusiastic about it.
Yeah,
maybe Andrew Johns was. And I James knows, but you know, I have this thing about, I'm pretty sure Joey is as good as everyone says he is, but I'm very dubious about the era that he played in.
Oh yeah.
You know, I've tried to retail this this idea before.
But it's like at the moment with,
I just don't think, yeah, he was great. I'm sure. I do not think the kind of players around him at that time were, you know, kind of. Were of a particularly high level historically.
Okay, it's interesting to say that.
Are we really going to go down this path?
No, it sounds like
something we should, you know, kind of savor.
Yeah, but just one thing about what's going on with Winx at the moment. I don't know anything about horse racing. I'm sure Winx is great.
Funny enough, Joey Johns would probably know a lot about this.
How good are the second and third and fourth place horses?
Isn't that the problem of all horse racing? Wasn't I going on one of my late afternoon diatribes here about, we don't really know when it comes... Unless you know horses, you just don't know. Because we don't race the best horses against each other.
To which
our kind of boss then said to us, well, you know, yeah, there's all different types of races for all different types of horses.
But the question should be, how good is Winx compared to the opposition that it's racing against? And if the opposition's poor, then it kind of puts that situation in the same one as Joey.
So what we're saying is that we should race Winx against motorbikes.
Race? Yeah, why not? But you know what I mean? Like, what is Winx up against?
I totally agree with you. It really is a bullshit sports writer argument to say that, you know, you can only ever beat who is around at the time.
And it's obviously doing that and all good. Yeah. But anyway.
Maybe the whole point is that Joey was so good he made everybody else look, you know, not as good as they were historically.
There's that argument too.
It's just, you know, one of the things that you kind of think about, like, yeah, because we're alive through the time, so we're kind of, you can actually remember it.
Yeah.
But as you get some distance from some historical distance, you come to appreciate in the generation after him, you know, you had not only like a third, it would be like Thurston running around and then Smith and Slater and Inglis never existed.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That to me is the, yeah, is, you know, kind of the equivalent of, you know, and of Johns.
And Joey didn't.
I freely admit this is an argument you can punch full of holes, it's unfair. Fire away, Twitter.
Yeah. Anyway, I reckon Langer was better than
him.
That's an argument for another show.
Yeah, I think the dead in goal sphere will probably double down on this.
I've asked it before, but I might do that next week, hey? Yeah. Or whenever, week after, whatever. Yeah, who's the greatest player of all time? And all right, we'll keep
that
in mind.
It's going to come back Cliff Lyons.
And
surely it's going to come back Cliff Lyons. The amount of Cliff Lyons love out there is just...
There is. Yeah. I've not heard one single negative thing said about him in my entire life.
There you go.
No one's got anything bad to say about him. and nor should they either, apparently. He's a lovely fella.
Must league thing I did?
Oh, yeah.
Hijacked
that one.
Doesn't matter what league thing I did. Because you come to this podcast to listen to kind of... issues about the standards of horse racing, and so I'm going to say the most league thing I did was, funnily enough, inspired by here's a shout out to the Warrior who kind of started needling me about
the Warrior goes all right. Yep.
The Warrior was needling me about James watching kind of rugby league streams during work hours. So inspired by, you know, James's work ethic, I, of course, I took the opportunity this week to do what is now a very rugby league thing, and I watched an NFL game at work. And I'm not an NFL fan, but I was lured in by this Kansas City Los Angeles game that everybody kind of in North America seemed to be talking about yesterday. So a very rugby league thing to do now, watch the NFL, or kind of, you know, go to the NFL, or just do anything related to the NFL. I think one of the things I kind of kind of, we're going to obviously kind of embrace this topic again a bit later when we come. We are plainly going to talk about Val Holmes today. But one thing that is kind of remarkable, if your level of engagement with the NFL is only kind of partial, as I suspect a lot of rugby league fans are.
Yeah.
But this game, rather notably yesterday, finished 54-51. You know, and that's the thing about NFL football these days. If you haven't watched it for a while, or if, say, your habit is to watch the Super Bowl kind of just every year and that's about it. Yeah, just offensive football, attacking football in the NFL is just, you know, just absolutely skyrocketing right now.
Yeah,
the game is like evolving. The critics love to call it like the damnedest basketball on grass.
Because
it really is. It's just an attacking feast now. And you got to wonder whether one of the things that the rugby cards could probably take as an opportunity in the States is a game that actually has like kind of a bit of a physically grueling element to it now, because they're kind of. I'm not saying, not to say that the NFL isn't physical. I mean, there's still hard hits and amazing athleticism and so forth. But the game really is just, it really is so up and down and back and forth now that that element, that kind of, that root in kind of in rugby football that it had deep in its past, where, you know, you kind of had a bit of an arm wrestle, the push and pull of attack and defense. Yeah, that's really fast evaporating from the NFL.
I don't get why. Okay, the attacking patterns are obviously working.
Mm.
What's happening with the game's defense? Because you said that sort of high scoring thing is becoming more and more common.
Yeah,
if that was in our code, like there'd be major alarm bells going off about defensive structures and what's happening.
Probably, I mean, I think what it I've taken a fascination in it recently. I think. Part of it has to do with the way the rules are being interpreted.
Very
obviously.
It's very poignant to rugby league then, isn't
it? It's basically how the rules are being interpreted in relation to the passing game.
Yeah.
If you're a if you're a defensive back, it is really hard to get physical with a receiver.
Yeah.
In any scenario these days, so you touch them, the penalty is going to be called. It's almost like basketball in that regard, where you get fouls called, basically. So, the passing games have become so sophisticated and the quarterbacks have become very accurate. And the coaches in particular have started to scheme around, the idea that, you can't touch the receiver. So it's hard to really stop the receiver from what he wants to do.
Okay.
So that's part of the reason they're moving the ball kind of like... further and faster than they ever have before. And the other thing that they've done is, and this is probably the most pronounced change, is instead of a game that's played more in the middle of the field, if you want to kind of draw out from the rugby DNA of the sport, like in the ruck, so to speak, it's a game that's now being played in space. They're really good, NFL coaches now are really good at manipulating kind of the width of the field.
Okay.
So they play right across the width of the field and stretch kind of defenses out and, to the idea where...
Okay.
Yeah, defenders are really isolated. If they make one mistake on a play, that's it. They're going to get burned. So, it was an interesting edge. And not for one second did I actually thought drift into my mind that could Val Holmes actually play in a game like this? But that's another topic to be discussed.
I wonder how many touchdowns he's going to score in the Super Bowl next year, Val Holmes. I love all the analysis that's come out about this is how Val Holmes is going to excel in the NFL and all this sort of stuff. We don't know.
Mm.
Like this, it's a massive risk for him. We might as well talk about
it.
It is.
My thought. It's one of those things that, when it happened the first time around with Hayne, it was kind of interesting. But, and now this kind of seems like one of those kind of fairly tepid kind of reruns.
Do you think, there's a bit of selfishness to it, isn't there? Oh, is that what he's doing? He's leaving the Sharks. Paul Gallen's blown up about it.
Yeah.
He's leaving the
Sharks. Banned for life. You can do...
A lot of people laughing.
You can do some terrible things in the game, but walking on a contract should get you banned for life.
Absolutely. And while all this is going on, so we've had Hayne, we've got Holmes attempting it now. Jordan Mailata is over there and part of a squad, isn't he?
Yeah.
People are forgetting about him. So
absolutely.
Yeah, this is more of a thing than what we think it is.
you know, the thing that kind of, the two thoughts about this that I can't get out of my head. Firstly, is this really just a leverage ploy in terms of his move to his, you know, his purported move to North Queensland?
It was up until yesterday, because you and I talked about that. Mm. But didn't the Sharks stipulate that if he did come back?
Yeah, to come. But yeah. Can they enforce that? Like, he's only contracted to the end of 2019.
Yeah,
to use that term, I am not a lawyer, but you know, I mean, is that is the idea that he might return in 2020 and they can seek an injunction against him playing for anybody else?
That he'd owe them a season of payment, wouldn't he? If he broke that.
Oh well, they just don't have to pay him.
Or that, yeah.
You know, I mean, if that's the thing, I mean, like, I don't know how that contract works. I mean, is there language in there that basically says if you do not play for a season, and then you were to come back to the sport, you owe us beyond the life of the contract.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't seem to make sense to me. But
all I read was the Sharks said that if he did come back, it has to be with them.
Mm.
So they'd have to be.
I don't know. Can that be in a contract somewhere?
I don't know.
I don't think you can do that.
I read it.
You know, that's like an employer limiting your ability of where you can go.
Yeah, I saw it on the internet, so it must be
must be true.
No, good luck to him. What's he going to... what's his plans? I must admit, my mind has brushed over this because I'm starting to see it more and more. But is he going to be a wide receiver or... Yeah. I don't even know.
You know, hard to say. I mean, like, I can remember when Hayne was doing this experiment, trying this experiment the first time around, I was talking some journalist buddies, and we were kind of spitballing what it is, who are both kind of interested in, who are either kind of leagueies who followed the NFL or vice versa. And we all suggested that, you know, I mean, could end up as a special teams guy, you know, someone who could tackle on special teams and return kicks as well.
Okay.
But that's as you know, you don't really keep a roster spot for guys like that. You know, sorry, I mentioned two things before. Here's the second thing I wanted to talk about. And I mentioned this to you yesterday. You know, I've become fascinated in this whole scenario by this trip that Holmes took to the Nike global headquarters in Portland with Marcus Bontempelli of BKG fame.
And he saw some pretty green grass over there, didn't
exactly.
he?
Exactly. And I do wonder, I'm fascinated by this idea that this is the kind of thing that inspires guys to try things like going to the NFL. Like, whereas in the old days,
definitely,
you kind of set your career and you set your expectations. And this is why, I guess this is kind of our entree to talk about. Do you want to talk about? Yeah, no, sorry. Let's keep on this topic. That's a real brass ring that you kind of put out there for these guys. And, you know, they've got that, you know, marvelous athletic confidence, athletic overconfidence, athletic arrogance, to believe that they can do something like that.
Yeah.
Like, you know, make it kind of in a sport that they've never played for their entire lives. So, yeah, I mean, I do get fascinated that's the thing that kind of inspired him to take a shot at this.
I reckon you're dead right.
Mm.
And I reckon that's why these centres of excellence in rugby league and all that, and all of our sports are starting to pop up, because we were talking yesterday about, you know, the appeal of these brand new buildings and stuff that are being implemented. Penrith invite James Maloney out to Penrith, and if our gym is still underneath the grandstand with a rusted out spa bath that Royce was talking about in our interview a few months ago, does James Maloney even think about signing? But we take him to this new Centre of Excellence, its academy. This is pretty cool.
You've got to look like a professional sport. You know what I mean? You kind of got to have the leather seats and the
and your name on the locker,
and you know the cafeteria, that, you know, kind of with the bright, you know, the bright colors and the open plan design.
You know, with all that,
I really do think I do wonder how much of this, you know, influences. You know, a lot of times, like, people say, "Oh, it's just the money." They put the number on the contract in front of me, and that's why I signed. I don't believe that.
Not in our sports, because our pro athletes still don't get that much money for what they do. Like, you know, I mean,
I don't know, relative to what, you know.
Definitely, yeah. But, I mean, you offer, just say Cameron Smith gets $1 million.
Yeah.
He only gets to play with half of that.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
No.
So it's not, I reckon it is more of, anyway, we can go anywhere with this, can't we? But, yeah, like, Cameron Smith has the Brisbane Broncos and the Wests Tigers to pick two options out.
Mm.
He's just not going to go to the Broncos automatically, is he, on that money? He wants to check out the surroundings and the schools.
Yeah.
There's so much more to it than money.
Liz, my thought would be that this kind of thing is really influential for probably a young player, for an established veteran guy. They'd probably come to understand that the bells and whistles are exactly that. You know, what matters is really the intangible stuff around an organization.
So Val Holmes is in that really impressionable age at the moment.
I would have thought even younger. I would have thought a guy coming out of, like, you know, kind of the under 20s is the kind of person who could be really dazzled by, you know, say Brisbane's new facility, or that Panthers academy as you're talking about.
Or where's the one that Holmes went to? Portland.
That's Nike headquarters, and he's probably around. He's looking at the signs of the other big kind of worldwide athletes. The one other thought that kind of really came to mind in the midst of all of this, and it's something that you've probably heard from me before. I don't know whether I've said it on the pod. Probably have, because, you know, I'm really out of original material. But I think when we, and to kind of allude to something we kind of already mentioned before, when we get some historical perspective on this, when we really get some distance from this era that we're currently in, I think we're going to come to appreciate that maybe the most influential player of this period was Sonny Bill Williams.
You're always banging on about him.
In the sense that Sonny Bill, the way he has actually conducted his career as a rugby footballer, has been the thing that has influenced the thinking of a lot of the younger kind of talented players who have come after him. I think we're beginning to see the leading edge of that. Maybe that'll kind of eventually kind of become kind of outdated, and the kind of the trend will just solidify back into, like, guys just pursuing their careers. But I cannot but think, when I look at someone like Holmes trying his hand at this, and then the persistent rumors that just won't die down about what Kalyn Ponga will do beyond next year. I've got to think that, you know, the way kind of players now see their careers, and this might be a millennial thing, like, you know, because they're, you know, like, no employer has ever shown them loyalty, so they're not apt to show loyalty back.
Exactly.
They are looking always for the next better opportunity. And one of the things that I think, I wouldn't call it a challenge, because I don't think it rises to the level of that. But one of the things that, you know, that's got to be in the heads of kind of rugby league thinkers is the idea that, you know, the really great talents of the game are good enough to go to a lot of different places.
Absolutely. The rugby league athlete is a pristine athlete.
Is a superior athlete. And so, you know, the prospect of being able to take that, whether it be union, NFL, you know, the BKG, as we've seen, the prospect will be there. And so it's not like a thing where, you know, like, when an American football player goes to go play NFL, you know, the old joke was, you know, if you didn't like your situation, where are you going to go? Canada? You know, because that was the joke. Like, where else are you going to, you know, actually do the thing that you're, you know, kind of really good at in sport? League doesn't have that. And I'm increasingly seeing that, you know, it seems to me it wasn't really just the one Sonny Bill, wasn't it? We saw what, you know, kind of Folau did, what Inglis Holmes did, what Hayne also eventually later ventured.
Yeah, and there's other blokes like Wendell Saylor, Matt Rogers.
Yeah, exactly.
There was an era of that, wasn't
it? To me that was more of a prosaic kind of move to union where they could get money, where, you know, the whole thing was that, you know, you could get money playing union before, and now you could, so they did it.
And they certainly weren't as young as Holmes is now, and that sort of plays. It was a sweetener towards the end of their career, wasn't it?
Like I said, maybe this won't become a thing. Maybe this is, you know, just sort of it's a fad that dies out, kind of, you know, as we see more and more guys try it and then, you know, kind of not succeed with it.
Yeah.
But it's intriguing to me. I mean, I wish kind of Val the best. Like, I mean, it would be, you know, I mean, just like, you know, kind of for Hayne to actually make a roster was really quite amazing.
Unbelievable.
If he were to, you know, kind of, you know, do same. And one of the things that I do think that's intriguing is he's going to that development program that Mailata went to.
Okay.
So he's actually engaging in a pathway. It's not just a case of, oh, I'm going to put myself out there and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, say maybe someone will notice me. He's actually trying to kind of yeah, kind of do something structured that might get him where he wants to go.
That's interesting, because when I spoke to him early on in the year, Jordan,
yeah.
I said, what are your realistic chances of actually getting into a squad or et cetera? Yeah. Something to do along the lines of that. And he said, oh, you know, I'm under no illusion that of the work that I've got ahead of me. I'm only young. And I said, are you acting as a bit of a sort of spokesperson or a guinea pig or something along those lines? And he said, yeah, basically it's to raise awareness that these sort of options are open to Aussie athletes. And
yeah.
And it's obviously, I mean, I'm not saying that Jordan's a reason that Val Holmes is taking this path, but something must have happened, like, to change the message that this can happen. Like,
well, yeah, and plainly, the more links that are forged, the more it makes it real.
Yeah, you
know,
definitely.
I think that, you know, there's definitely an element of that.
And so. And the NRL is going to have to accept the fact that this is a career option. This is reality now.
I think it'd be more worrisome if this does become what we were alluding to before, which is this a leverage play? Is this just basically a thing that, you know,
that's what you
I'm going to go away for a year, I'm going to build up my marketability, and I'm going to come back to the team I want to play for in the league, and they're going to give me 50% more on my contract, because I'm far more yeah, marketable now. I'm far better known now than I was, you know, when I left 2 years ago or a year ago.
We're going to briefly pass on him now, but that's exactly what happened with Jared Hayne.
Yeah.
He went away, hated by Queenslanders, came back, first game for the Titans, absolute sellout, all to see Jared Hayne. And so that's probably what's going to happen if he comes back for the Sharks. Welcome back, Val Holmes.
Yeah.
Do you want to say anything about Hayne, or you just want to leave it to the law? You know, that thing called the law?
I have one thing to say, which is, I couldn't help but notice that on the coverage of the telly, and not that I'm ascribing, you know, much forethought to the coverage of the Daily Telegraph. Here's a reference. The reference to him as NRL star, Jared Hayne, which I found interesting. I don't know why. I'm not trying to make a kind of a comment, positive or negative, either way. I'm just saying that, you know, why you say NRL star as opposed to rugby league star?
Okay,
it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Or NFL star.
Or sports star.
Yeah. Sevens rugby star.
Exactly. I guess it's not inaccurate in the sense that the NRL is his current, or is the league he's currently playing in, or was playing in,
as
his current employer. So I'm not critiquing it or criticizing it on that level. I'm just saying that, why kind of? I mean, I'm pretty sure over at Moore Park, that's not the way. That's the association they want to be forging. But
they'd be like, he doesn't have a contract with a rugby league club at the moment. So, yeah, there you go.
You know, one of the things, there's a wonderful Twitter account that I follow, and I encourage everyone on, you know, kind of, even though this doesn't kind of, but it is a collection of the instances in which. I'll use the term because I've got to use it in this context. The AFL or kind of related bodies use the term AFL to describe what was formerly known as Australian rules football or Australian football.
Yep.
And the name of the account is AFL is not a sport.
Oh, yeah. It's like Africa is not a country.
Not a country. So the idea being that we're old enough to remember that, when we grew up with the sport known as Australian rules or Aussie rules football. But of course, it became a thing for the AFL to try and brand AFL as the name of the sport.
But people,
I'll know that rugby league is basically, or the NRL is basically lost it when they try to do that. When they try to brand rugby league as NRL.
As NRL,
Which I don't think will ever happen.
I grew up calling Aussie rules VFL. It was VFL. It was dead set.
There you go.
That's
really good. But that was the as for any other thoughts on Hayne, I'm going to be very politic about that.
The best thing
This is a matter well beyond the jocular tone of, you know, of a sports related podcast. I mean, all I can say is that this is headed towards great kind of book territory for somebody someday.
And dead set. If you want really balanced, well thought out opinions, just hit up Twitter. Some of the analysis by people is disgraceful, honestly.
Yeah.
Just leave it alone. Magic Round tickets went on sale through the week. And they announced, it's been announced that it's going to be a proper magic round from Thursday to Sunday.
Yeah, I was a bit disappointed.
Yeah, you were, weren't you?
I was.
I'm not too bothered by it. Like, I'm like, whatever.
I get it. I understand why, because the TV needs its time slots filled. But there was something about the density of 2 days that really
the magic weekend
impressed me. But
fair enough.
Yeah, like the fact that they're doing it, I think, is just a positive. Is an unalloyed positive.
Yeah. Tickets seem quite cheap too, without sounding too much like an NRL promo vehicle. But
I mean, less than $100, wasn't it, for the whole thing? I mean, that's fantastic.
That's good for Queensland films.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I did have one possible reason as to why they stretched it right out. Mm. It might be field maintenance. Because you're going to have...
I don't plan a bad field.
Yeah, I know, but...
How often do we have to listen to, our athletes? Like, you and I, we kind of sit next to our mates, our colleagues in the soccer pod. And, they're forever complaining about how bad a field is, Like, this game wasn't, invented, played on grass that you could, and also in the rain where you could kind of scratch the whole thing up. why does everybody have to play on perfect grass these days?
Because... Doesn't the ball have to glide across the soccer field and stuff?
Yeah, I'm talking about rugby.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Even in soccer, I mean, it's a perfectly valid way to play the game where, if it's on bad pitch, kick the ball up in the air. That's just something as basic as in the sports, kind of in the very history of the core of the sport and when it originated.
I'd never forget. After the 2000 World Cup.
The perfect grass argument, I'm scarred because, from my time covering golf, I'm just sick and tired of perfect grass arguments.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. After the 2000 World Cup, which was, the final was held at Old Trafford, Australia and New Zealand just smashing into each other, your rugby league I'm talking about, digging it up, and then Alex Ferguson just blew up a tree and said, what are we doing playing rugby? It looks like a goat track, and it was right, dead set. right in the middle of soccer season.
Sir Alex Ferguson.
And the Queensland Origin jumper has...
Two-tone maroon.
A new design has been released, and so there'll be meltdown north of the border, will there? Just like there was with our jersey.
The beauty of it is that whoever loses next year's series can just blame the jumper.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have changed the jumper. That was the cause of the defeat.
That's it.
So there's going to be no excuse either side.
I can't see the big deal. I don't really care. I mean, as long as New South Wales doesn't go out in pink or whatever. But
what if they really screw with us one year and have New South Wales go out in maroon and Queensland go out in blue?
That would... What would you do? Follow the jersey or the players? Ooh.
That's a tough one. In the idea, along the lines that, the Jerry Seinfeld idea that, we cheer for the laundry, maybe it would confuse the hell out of us.
I like that one. You introduced me to that one.
Yeah. It is a lasting genius, bit of genius.
Very good.
From Seinfeld.
No listener question this week, but another treat that we have for you is through the week I caught up with Ron Coote, rugby league legend. And founder and honorary president of the Men of League Foundation. So we're about to duck into an interview with him. Just a few interesting tidbits about Ron. Mm. 23 games for Australia. He played for Souths between 64 and 71 and won 4 grand finals.
Wow.
Moved to Easts between 72 and 78 and was part of the 74-75 grand final double. So 6 grand finals he won.
Jeez.
Yeah.
How many games all up?
143 plus 109, whatever that is.
252.
Yeah. Wow. Sorry, I was just taking back to that Simpsons episode. Yeah.
But I could have been wrong there, and you never would have known. Yeah, I can remember, for a thing on longevity we did a while back, looking at kind of the guys who had played a lot of games back in that, what was his name? Terry Lamb.
Oh, yeah, Jeff Gerrard.
Jeff Gerrard, that's the one, yes.
He was a former Penrith and Parramatta player.
Oh, yeah. Penrith and Parramatta, Sharks player, okay, sorry. It's amazing, game was just it was just a more brutal game in terms of how grueling it was from week to week and kind of your recovery in between. So it's almost like those guys when you see kind of like those guys who played that number of games from those previous eras of footy, it's a different curve. It's something else.
Because I asked him about that, like on the 67-68 Kangaroo Tour, they played 21 games against club teams from Britain and France, plus three tests against Great Britain, plus three tests against France.
Jeez.
28 games all up. And yeah, because I asked him, I said, well, that's massive commitment, isn't it? And he said, everybody loved it.
Yeah.
You did it because you loved it, like going away and all the experiences and that kind of thing. Another few interesting things that are contained within an article that I've also put on our website. So if you've come through to this podcast, you might have come through the article. He had a great attacking partnership with Bob McCarthy. He was a member of the New South Wales Rugby League Judiciary throughout most of the 90s, Ron Coote. And he owned owns still, I think his family still owns, a chain of McDonald's restaurants there on the South Coast. Very astute businessman.
That's right.
Yeah, they're at Nowra and Bomaderry, places like that.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I just drove down there. I couldn't help but notice how many McDonald's and KFCs and Hungry Jacks there are down there.
You might have sailed into the...
The most league thing I did. The real most league thing I did all the last week.
Yeah, so the article on the website talks a lot about his men of league work, and there's a great anecdote that he gave me just before we flash over to the interview about how men of league started. And he was visiting his daughter in hospital 22 years ago, who just had her baby, and a nurse came up to him and said, I've got a bloke, you know, there's a bloke in this ward who you might know, and it ended up being an old Dragons bloke. Yeah. And Ron Coote just thought it was sad that it was Saturday afternoon and this ex-footballer had no visitors. And so he sort of got this idea into his head of, I wonder what good it would do to create like a newsletter telling people who was good and, you know, who was in good health and how other ex-players were going. And then, that was 22 years ago. And Men of League was established in 2002. So I think the idea must have festered away. And then all of like one day he just decided to really launch into action with the Men of League Foundation.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I thought that was a lovely story about how the inspiration behind such a brilliant thing in rugby league.
Yeah.
Men of League.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, it's about more than ex-players. It's about the families in rugby league, you know, country rugby league, the wives, secretaries, administrators, kids. It does so much great work. So just before we hand you over to Ron Coote, is there anything that we've missed?
Yes. One thing that I wanted to bring up, just even to canvas it quickly, Jamaica. Yes.
That was.
Isn't this a wonderful development?
What's really good and why it's really good for rugby league is it's the exact same premise as what happened with Tonga.
Tonga's, I thought you were about to say the exact same premise as called running.
No, God. The comparison was inevitable, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So Tonga works on several levels, and two of them are massive population of Tonga people in Sydney and also Auckland. There's a massive Jamaican population in Britain.
Yeah.
That is, this is going to...
Canada too.
Yeah. Canada, yeah. This is going to escalate, you know, in the words of... Ron Burgundy, very quickly.
Yeah, no, it is an unalloyed, again, I use unalloyed twice in this pod, good. The one thing I kind of got in mind, and I know there's a rep charge and there's an expanded kind of tournament field, so it's less of an issue, but do you think International League would be a bit worried if the United States didn't make the next World Cup?
Yeah, I think
considering that they've got, you know, they've got hosting duty kind of after that. Yeah.
No, that's good. Well, I don't have anything else, mate, so... we'll get into Ron, and we'll leave you with that, and we'll catch you next week. So Ron Coote, thanks very much for joining us this week. What qualities did a good lock forward back in your era need? Because you were tall and had terrific pace, which still to this day aren't really considered lock prerequisites, are they? Like, they're quite
unusual. No, they're not anymore. Not in if you play in the forwards. speed is handy, but it's not the number one requisite to have. But I could play out in the backs if I needed to, and I could play in the forwards too. I could tackle. I was a pretty good tackler, and I just think you need to be able to do those things. You need a a sprinkly of all the talents in rugby league to play, you know, to play in the back row forwards like these blokes did, but in them days. But you know, the things have changed. Obviously, you know, the game's changed a bit. And, you know, it's still you need to be able to, you need all those qualities. You need to be able to tackle. You need to be able to run, and you know, and do those things. And be a fit person. You've got to be fit these days.
Yeah,
you know, and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think you might have told me previously about your training regime. You were an absolute mad trainer, weren't you? Like, what were some of the sort of things that you used to get up to back in the day, training wise?
We used to train Tuesday and Thursday night at the Rabbits when I first went there, and they'd see you at the game on Saturday. Or, you know, as most of the games were on Saturday, but then there was a match of the day on Sunday, you know.
Yeah.
Or there might have been a match of the day at the Sydney Cricket Ground. So, you know, that's how the competition used to work. I trained Tuesday and Thursday, and then I didn't do it early in the first year, but the next year I started to train on my own and do some sprint training. And then I found weights, and I started lifting weights, and I think that all helped. And then at that stage, there was, you know, they told us that one of the things they said, don't lift weights, it'll slow you down too much. You know, with a lot of, you know, they just got things all mixed up. But look, I used to do a lot of training. I'd train more than, you know, I just sort of, that's what I said, I think the game is, It's all perspiration, and it's sort of 90% perspiration and probably 10% ability. But so by that I mean that you need to train. You can have the ability, but you still need to be, you know, super fit to make it really to the top, I think.
Yeah, no, great answer. And speaking of ability, looking at video of you in action illustrates many things. Among them was your defensive and tackling skills were just mesmerising. Was that all about a love of tackling and combined with the training techniques? Did you really pride yourself on your defence?
Yeah, well, I did. I prided myself on my defence. And I used to have a bloke called Chicky Cow. He used to give me some... He was a former great lock forward in with South and played for Australia. And he used to get me tackling, you know, at South training on the Tuesday and Thursday.
Yeah.
He'd, you know, just go through the drills and that all helped, and you know, where to put your head and where to put, you know, where to hit him with your shoulder and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, and I had, you know, I had great years at South, so everyone used to try and help you wherever they could.
And so we've talked about South, better talk about the Roosters for a bit. One thing in particular that I noticed about the Roosters during your time was in 75, you guys won the minor premiership by 10 points. Like, was that evidence of a great side getting greater? Because it's quite unusual, judging by today's cutthroat close comps, isn't it? Like,
I'd say that. It was a great team. You've got to say that. And I'd say we won the premiership by 10 points. And then we had all them great players, you know, like you had the Brass and Harris and you know, the two great backs there, and Louis Mullins on one wing. You know, look, it was a great side. You know, you couldn't say anything about it. You know, they were all good. Johnny Mays was a great halfback. He played terrific.
Oh.
And
you could go on forever. Mays,
you go on forever. They're all legends. Yeah.
and
Jack Gibson, of course, was a good coach. You know, he done good.
Yeah, he was. He's considered such a pioneer in so many techniques, isn't he? To this day. Yeah.
Well, yeah. He started the Nautilus machines. We all had to use the Nautilus machines, which was weightlifting machines.
I bet you're all happy about that.
Well, I didn't mind. We'd have to do it twice a week.
Yeah.
So, and that's what we used to do. That was one of the things No one else. That's how we won those. No one else used to lift these weights. You know, we had. They're a machine which which has got a camper on them, which was like a wheel which made it hard, not only when you started but when you stopped too. Yeah.
Oh God! Could you feel at the time that the game was changing in professionalism, even back then? Could you?
Oh well, I think it's grown. Even today, you can see there's changes in there. It's all the time now. There's more and more things happening.
Yeah, for sure. And so we'll move on to the rep stuff now. And what I've always wanted to ask you was, did you feel quite honoured that, although you came along at the same time as a bloke called Johnny Raper, and you both played lock, and did you feel quite honoured that you were made to play another position just because you had to play in the team? Like, there couldn't be rep teams without you? That must have been a good feeling to know that you were really, really needed.
I never put much thought into it. I just thought that they'd put me in the second row and I could play anywhere. They could have put me in the front row and I'd have played there.
Yeah.
I really wanted to play for Australia. Yeah,
yeah, no, fair enough. Fair enough. And I was just wondering if you could give us just a little bit of a glimpse into life on that 67-68 Roo Tour. I was reading the records and you guys played 21 games against club sides from Britain and France, plus three tests each against Great Britain and France. Like, it must have been
28 games we had.
Unbelievable.
I think I played 21, so I sort of played quite a lot, you know.
Yeah.
And that was after I'd played in the 60. What are we talking about here?
Yes, 67.
68.
Yeah.
So I played right through to into the grand final at South. So I don't know how many games I had that year, but it probably would have been, say, 20 or something like that, plus the playoffs so I would have had, say, 20 and another 21 playing on the Kangaroo Tour. So I had quite a lot of games. Yeah. I was really tired. That was,
yeah,
that year was 69 when I would come back and they give me a couple of weeks off, and then I started. We had a Christmas in France.
Mm.
So because we played so many games over there, so anyway, yeah. So when we come back from there, I was buggered. I was really tired, so I had a pretty ordinary year to start with, and then the World Cup started, and I was in that and. And then I just freshened me up, and I was back into it again. Yeah.
No, that's good. Yeah, because I noticed I looked up the records, and that last game, last test against France to end the 67-68 tour, you played that in the early days of January. So it spilled over spilled over into the new year. That's remarkable. Yeah.
Yeah, it was in them days. That's what they done. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's quite a personal commitment, isn't it? Like, back in the day, it was really you were giving your life to this. Weren't you?
Yeah, you love the trip. Everything was happened on it.
Yeah.
Was like a trip of a lifetime. For if you love football and the teams we played against and the people we played against, right through England and then France, and going through all the big cities, Paris and London, and I was a young kid from Maroubra, sort of thing, from Kingsford, and it was a great. Great experience, really.
Oh, I'm starting to see the payoff now. So,
that's probably, I just loved it, just to be a professional footballer was a big thing too.
Oh, terrific. And I just want to end on this. I'll let you go after this. You spoke with absolute class at this year's Rugby League Immortals announcement, despite missing out on induction yourself this year. Like, were you blown away by the support that you would have received around about then? Especially being held in such high regard by so many people. Must give you a good feeling.
Yeah, well, that was a great thing. I mean, I'm a pretty modest bloke, and I don't sort of blow in a trumpet or anything, and I just thought it was great.
Thanks very much for your time, Ron. It's been such a honour speaking to you, and really looking forward to seeing you around the traps in 2019.
Thanks very much, Jim. Appreciate it, mate. Thank you.